Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think last night was a good win. I think last night impressed me. And I'm not easily impressed.
I thought that they were cooked. When they got behind 2-1, I thought, oh, this is going to be it. Here, because I told you, I feel like there's a skid coming.
Right?
And, you know, they gave up a couple of crappy goals, I thought. Like, you know, just careless with the puck in their own end. You know, goals getting jammed in around the net, the whole thing. And I thought, this is it. They've hit a wall. They're going to, you know, here comes a 3-5 or whatever it is over the next 8 games, something like that. And then all of a sudden, and I can't tell you how many times this has happened this year, where they look shaky early. And, you know, sometimes it's 1-0. Sometimes it's last night. It's like they give up the next two after they score first. And then you think, well, that's it. Here it comes. And they rally and they come back and they win the game. And not only win it, but basically control it the second half of the game. Like, it just feels, you know, at some point I'm really going to have to start believing in them. Like, I just think it's...
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like we all expect them to backslide. We all expect, you know, water to seek its level and for them to come back to earth. And last night's a perfect night to do it. They're facing a good team. Calgary's a playoff team in the West that came ready to play. They're a good, talented team. They're physical. They brought their game. And it's like, okay, now you just start to naturally, you know, up and down, ebbs and flows, and they won't come back to earth.
They ended up, especially in that third period, out-physical in them, and the fourth line was great. Backus was great. Penalty kill was great. They're a legit team.
Last night impressed me. Last night, impressive. Of all the years, I mean, of all the games and of all the stuff that's gone on so far, last night sort of got my attention. Like, if you're not going to, that's a perfect night. Western Conference team, doesn't matter in your standings, right? It's like a Tuesday night at the Garden.
2 years ago, they get down 2-1. That's your typical Claude dud.
It's an automatic loss the last couple of years. And instead, Cassidy makes a really good little move with his roster there, moving Pasternak down. They come out in the second and third period, and they go on to win, and they, like, pull away. And they match Calgary's physicality. I'm like, huh, okay, all right. So, like, I thought last night was a big boy win. That got my attention. I'll also tell you this. For the first time, and I'm not going to go too far with it, I'm just going to tell you, because I'm honest and I'm a slave to the truth. And I don't hide things from you.
Oh, boy. Here comes something stupid.
And I will just tell you, I don't think this is stupid. But I've felt that in the past, and I've been wrong. For the first time last night, I felt a little the Bergeron MVP thing.
Oh, all right. Oh. I thought you were going to say something much stupider.
No, that is kind of stupid because he ranks 31st in the league in scoring, and no one else would say that. But I felt a little bit of the, okay... If you want to talk Bergeron MVP, I'm not going to mock you for it. That's the first time I felt it last night, where I really felt it. I mean, he's been so freaking good. He's been so good. And the scoring. So that, you know, that to me is what makes it part of the conversation. You don't win MVPs because you're good on the faceoff circle. You don't win MVPs. And as valuable as those things are, I'm not saying they're not valuable. They're important. But that's not what wins MVPs. You don't win MVPs when... You win the face-off circle and you're good in your own end and you're a three zone. You know, like that's not what MVPs are in that league. Maybe they should be, but they're just not. So it's silly to talk about him as an MVP. He's got 27 goals and that's pretty close to pacing to 40. So even though he's 31st in the league in scoring, he's now in the top 10 in goals. He's tied for 9th in goals. So if you want to tell me that he's the best player in the league in all three zones and he's the best face-off guy in the league, and he's going to be in the top 10 in goals, and he's going to sniff 40, and they're going to finish 1, 2, or 3 in the league? Okay. Fine.
He's in it.
Fine.
Yeah, he's in it.
Fine.
To me, it's the goal scoring that's been the striking thing with him this year. And look, we talked about, I don't know, what, a couple of weeks ago? How many times you see him in the power play in that slot area, just inside the right faceoff circle, one time and pucks past the goalie?
So I haven't seen him shoot the puck this well since he was 18 years old.
So that goal he scored on last night picked a corner.
It's like he gets a puck in that spot, bing, and he has not been that guy. I mean, he's been everything else, but he hasn't been a sniper since his first 2 years, since he was a 19-year-old kid, since before the concussion from Jones in Philadelphia. He hasn't been this kind of offensive player. And so I know I've mocked you, Bruins fans, just like I mocked the Celtics fans for chanting MVP at a guy who's going to finish fifth. And I'm still not telling you. I mean, Nikita Kucherov in Tampa Bay has led the league in scoring wire-to-wire on a team that's been in first place in the league wire-to-wire. So I don't think that Bergeron's a favorite or even necessarily should be the MVP. Again, Kucherov has led the league in scoring wire-to-wire on the team that's in first place. Hard to overlook that guy. Or Stamkos, eighth in the league in scoring. He's a plus 17 on a team that leads the league in points and has wire-to-wire. Hard to overlook those guys. But if you want to start talking about Bergeron, after last night, I'm not going to mock you. Because, boy, he's been good.
Oh, he's been awesome, really. It's been, and you know what? He didn't start out great. Like, and I'll go back and look. But I don't know, first 15 games, something like that. Like, there was a point where all of a sudden he started scoring like crazy. And now it's like he can't miss. He's picking corners. He's picking pucks out of midair and deflecting them in. He's always been good at tipping the puck, though. To me, he's one of the best I've ever seen at doing that. But it's ridiculous. And meanwhile, he's still giving you the whole, you know, the whole length of the ice.
It's 17 goals in his last 19 games. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so let's see how this holds or how he finishes. If he finishes, if he's 31st in the league in scoring, meaning points, and, you know, if the goal scoring tails off a little bit and he ends up with 30, not 40, and he's, you know, in the teens in goals or the low 20s in goals and he's 30 in points, that's not historically an MVP, man. I mean, that's just not. It's just not. I don't care how good you are on the dot or how you are on your own end or the three zones or all that. If you can't crack the top 30 in scoring or the top 10 in goals, I don't know if you should be an MVP. But he's ninth in goals right now, and man, he's been good, and so I'll allow it. So that's item number two. Item number one, I just thought it was a legit win. I keep expecting them to crash, and they're not. And I felt it from Bergeron last night. I loved Cassidy benching Pasternak. He didn't bench him. He moved him down. He moved him down to the third line. And it was such a simple little move, but I thought it was so appropriate, Maz, because last night became physical. I thought it was a kind of a playoff-style game. I mean, again, Calgary's a bigger team. They're little in places too. Like Goudreau's tiny, but they have some size and some grit, and they came in firing both barrels. Playoff team out west that has some size, and it was a physical game. It was a gritty game. Like, there was a lot of crap after the whistle in this game. And Pasternak had this thing in the first period where he tried to gain the zone a couple times on the power play. And Giordano, they're really good defenseman there. Blast him into next week. He gets frustrated, takes a slash.
Yeah, he got knocked on his ass.
And Cassie said, you know what? Let's put Backus up there. Let's match what Calgary's doing. Show Pasternak, you can't just keep giving away the puck at the blue line. Like, and I just love that kind of move. He didn't bury the kid. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be in the doghouse for a week or anything, but it's just two things. Recognizing the game. And for Pasternak, if you pull your crap, you're not automatically on this line and you don't get your ice. And especially because games in the playoffs are going to look like last night. And if you're playing the way that's just the wrong way, you're not guaranteed that spot.
See, and look, Pasternak is just the most recent case. And look, he's a more veteran guy now. He's been around for a few years. But he's done this with other guys. He's done it with DeBrusk. He did it with Heinen the other night. Heinen played 9 minutes in that game the other night.
Pasternak's another level, though.
It is, because he's a borderline superstar.
He's in his fourth year. Those kids are rookies.
Sure, absolutely. But I'm just saying that he does, it feels like he's got a good feel for a game. Like, independent of sending a message, he's also got a feel for a game. Like, this guy doesn't have it tonight. He's going to play less. Heinen played 9 minutes or something 2 nights ago.
Right.
Like, and DeBrusk, you know, early in the year, playing well, then he would go bad, they'd sit his ass down. He comes back, they put him in, he scores. Like, it just feels like he's got a really good feel for just about every guy in that team. Like, if you go in terms of players overachieving, the coaches feel, it's hard to find too many spots where they haven't done things right this year.
So, that was just a subtle little move last night that I loved in the short term and the long. You get Pasternak's attention. You help match a team that's doing something to you last night, so you're on it as the coach. And I think also down the road in the playoffs, maybe Pasternak is not going to be, you know, maybe Pasternak is better served being on a different line if it gets really physical. It's a seven-game grind. It becomes that sort of thing. Backus up there, you can match some physicality. It also shows you they have a little bit of a need. You know, as we look at the deadline, I think they need some size and physicality at winger because too many of their guys, Spooner can get rubbed out. Pasternak can get rubbed out. DeBrusk isn't, you know, he's just a kid.
Krejci.
Etc. Well, I think Krejci stands up to it pretty well. I'm not worried about Krejci. But some of their wings, I think some of their wings are, you know, young, soft, not ready, etc. And so it's nice to have Backus to bop up there, and, you know, all of a sudden he matches it. So that stood out. One final thing, as we talk about the Bruins at the deadline before we get to your phones, you're starting to hear the word chemistry down there, Maz, and how they don't want to disrupt the chemistry.
It's always dangerous.
Cam Neely to Steve Conroy in the Boston Herald.
Saw this.
It's a great group of guys, it really is, said Neely of his locker room. They're all pulling on the same rope, and the chemistry seems to be really strong right now, so that's something we've talked about with this group, chemistry. Historically, we've seen things happen at the deadline where maybe teams, after the fact, say we've made too many deep moves and disrupted the chemistry. So that's something we're cautious about. How much stock should they be putting into chemistry versus upgrading with talent?
Not a lot. And you know what? And I think he's masking what the real thing is. So I think he's feeling feeding you a line or a load of crap a little bit, because he looks at it and says, you know, this thing's working. We got a good young team. We like our young players. We've built a system now. We're not going to do anything crazy to rip it apart. So what do? You tell everybody, no, we got a good mix here. We got a nice chemistry. Things working. We're getting the whole is greater than the sum of the parts because the pieces are working together. And so we are content writing that out. Also, maybe you send people a message around the league. And again, I don't necessarily believe all the time in negotiating through the press or the media. But you tell other teams out there, we're not going to give you our best players if you want to trade us a rental.
If that's a negotiating play, hey, we're fine. We have good chemistry. We're in second place in the league. We're great, fine, to get you a better price, no problem.
But I don't think that's his first objective. I think his first objective is to tell the world, don't expect anything big, meaning his fan base.
I just hope it's one of those things versus the reality, which is we can't add because that will disrupt chemistry. You know, come on. You know, I mean, the year you won the cup, you added Thomas Cabrillet and was...
Peverly.
And Peverly, and was Recchi a deadline deal, or was he already on the team?
No, Recchi was already on the team, but they added another forward, too. Peverly and...
Peverly and Kelly.
Kelly, Chris Kelly, right.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
No, you're going to have tough matchups, you know, come April and May. You know, if we're fortunate enough to be playing well and playing at that time of the year, that's what he's going to see, and he's going to have to grow from the experience he got last year. So there was a little bit of that, for sure. He said, I love David's passion for the game, you know, his willingness to compete. We just have to remind him every once in a while how to compete and how to manage the puck and how to best help the team.
They have the best record in the league. They're a point behind Tampa, but they have two in hand. So I guess they're going to win the President's Trophy because they won't lose and they won't, like, backslide. So they've won 32 out of 37. And again, I just made that number up, but it's something like that. And they're going to win the President's Trophy. And they see a bad period from a young player on the first line. And Cassidy says, think, like...
Don't you love that about him, though?
Oh, my God. Like, I can't tell how many times with Claude and not... You know, we should be post-Claude now, even me. But how many times with Claude? It's like, Claude, that line's not working. It's okay. Mix it, you know. Put a guy down, bring a guy up. It's okay. Every coach does it. It's all right. And it's just, it would take a crowbar just to make a simple move like that. I could feel myself getting frustrated just thinking about it all those times. It's really not that hard. And, you know, so I'm not telling you that Bruce Cassidy is, you know, Scotty Bowman here. A lot of coaches would have done the same thing. It's just refreshing. Finally, we have a coach that does something like that.
I'll tell you, I mean this in every way imaginable. He's got an unbelievable feel for his players. He does. Like, because, Mike, you can't do it the way he does it and have the players still buy in without there being some sort of connection and, you know, communication and all of it.
It's early. It's all good.
Of course
now.
It's early.
But he's, you know, that was just a nice little move. That was a nice little move. That's all. I liked it. I appreciated it. We're starting Bruins. And your thoughts, Joe and Everett. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, guys. I'd love to see McDonough in a Bruins uniform, but I really hope that they don't sell the farm for it, you know?
So let's just define selling the farm. I mean,
well, you know, you guys were talking about some good players, but, you know, I'd stay with, you know, a couple of guys from Providence, they won't take.
Well, so, I mean, right, they won't. So the Rangers won't take the guys you have in Providence. I mean, let's just, but for the sake of argument, you can't get away with Sinishin and Zboril and all those guys that aren't quite ready who are still down there. They want Carlo or Heinen or DeBrusk. Would you do it for Ryan McDonough?
I told you I'd do one of the wings. Yeah, one of those guys. You should be able to look at those two guys and say, okay, you got a, you know, I see a little bit of replication there. And you say one of them will move, the other one will sign, and we'll go get, you know, we'll fill another area. You should be able to do that kind of stuff. I don't know if they will, and I'm not moving Carlo. You know, yesterday, late in the day, it's a good point. And I don't know if it was Mike from Woburn, but the idea that you can't have all these high-paid players. You're going to have to give McAvoy a chunk of money, and you're going to have to re-sign McDonough. Not doable.
You can have McDonough and McAvoy at the top if the rest of the decor is really affordable.
Okay, so
I mean, there's other teams who have two really high-paid, two good defensemen. All right, can do it. Calgary last night. Giordano and Hamilton both make a lot of money.
Okay, but I still factor in, you got money in Krejci, you got money in Rask, you got money in Bergeron, you got money in Marchand now, you've got money in Pasternak. Like, I don't want to, to me, a $4 million player like Carlo, if that's what he is, over 5 years is probably more valuable to them than, if you can do it without giving up Carlo and then let McDonough go, fine. After a year and a half, let McDonough go, then I'm in.
And he's a rental price, you know?
Right.
Here's Noah in Taunton on Bergeron. Is he the MVP, Noah?
He is not the MVP, but he would have been if they kept Sagan. If Chiarelli didn't trade Sagan for Louis Erickson, and Bergeron, Marchand, and Sagan were on the same line, you tell me where Bergeron would rank, you know, in goals and in
assists. So again, not to do this to you, but who's the coach? Because, again, and this is something that's tracked, that not something I would notice off the top of my head, but when you start to think about it, you notice it. Cassidy puts Bergeron out there in more offensive situations. When I say offensive situations, offensive zone faceoffs. Puck's frozen, it's in the offensive zone. Bergeron will go out there now much more than he used to. Claude used to really more deployment, sort of a defensive guy that matched the other team's best line, and if there was a key situation in his own zone, Bergeron would be out there in his own zone. Defensive zone starts versus offensive zone starts. And also, how adherent to just matching him is he? Claude would be really strict about, you know, there's Tavares, here comes Bergeron. You know, here comes...
it's all mindset, isn't it?
Goudreau, here comes Bergeron. Like, you know, every time. And I think Cassidy is much more willing to let Bergeron play on his own, meaning not just checking the other opponent's best line. If there's an offensive zone faceoff, he puts him out there. And it's just a little subtle tweak of the mindset. And the next thing you know, Bergeron is scoring like he hasn't scored since he was a kid.
See, I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, to me, that is... But think of the difference there. What you're talking about is Julian looks at it and says, we're going to worry about the other guy first. Cassidy says, uh-uh, you got to worry about us. You got to worry about us. My guy can score.
I think as long as Bergeron and Marchand are playing together, they're fine. So whether it's Sagan or Pasternak, I think that duo works, whoever the third guy is. George in Boston on the Bees. Hi, George.
Hey, how's it going? Big win for Boston, huh? 5-2. I mean, we got 35 wins, guys. I mean, I think this is the year that we are going to take over and win this World Cup.
Okay. It's the Stanley Cup. World Cup is every 4 years. The Olympics are now. USA gave away a 2-0 lead in the last 6 minutes to Slovenia.
Bad sign.
Where is Slovenia?
Somewhere in the Slavic world.
I get Slovakia. I get the Czech Republic. Slovenia?
Don't know.
Just say former Soviet Union, not usually.
It's not exactly a hockey. So anyway, I mean, I still don't feel like the Bruins are a cup team. I just can't. They're too new. It's too unexpected. I can't view them as a cup team. I can't. When Ryan Spooner is your second line right wing, I don't feel like you're a cup team. When Torrey Krug is your third highest minute guy on D, and I'm not even sure that he is, but I think he is. My guess is that he is. When Krug's your number three D, you're probably not quite good. Like, so I still look at it like that. I still look at Rask and say, he's never really carried you all the way. So I still don't view them as a cup team. But again, more wins like last night, and not that it was a big win. It was just, I so expected them to lose and not to push back. And they didn't. And so, like, eventually I'm going to have to think of them as a cup contender if they keep doing this.
I mean, it's mind-blowing. Like, if you do the math, they have the best record in the league.
I just said to you, they have the best record in the league.
Yeah. Did you? Is that host aren't listening?
I actually gave you about 25 seconds on it. They're the best team in the league. So you zoned out, not just for a minute, but for like, I mean, not just a second, for like a while.
No, I'm capable of that. Sometimes I get lost in my own thought.
Best team in the league. best record in the league.
I mean, it's insane.
And for how long? I mean, it's now, this is over 2 months now we've been at this. Pete in Essex, go Pete.
What is with this town? We get a team that's going well, and all of a sudden we're coveting players that we can't.
No, it's the deadline, Pete. Come on, we do this every year at the deadline.
I know, but I'm saying, you're telling me we can't trade someone like a Zarnik? We can't get DeBrus to get a Ryan McDonough? Are you kidding me?
Okay, Zarnik, Pete, I don't think anyone sheds a tear for Austin Zarnik. Would you be willing to trade Jake DeBrus if that's what it took?
Yep.
Okay, God bless you.
In a heartbeat. To get a Ryan McDonough? Are you kidding me? Who's going to take over when Z retires?
McAvoy, but you know, there's a little bit of a gap there.
I understand that, but you're going to be, you know, why wouldn't you take a Ryan McDonough at 4.5 mil, whatever he is, at his age, on this team? I think that's a no brainer, and you know, maybe I'm foolish and I'm putting a little faith in Sweeney, but he's drafted well. That's all I'm saying.
You're saying go draft the next DeBrusk. Okay.
So it's an interesting way to look at it. Look, they've hit on a lot of these young guys.
It's a hard call. You know, if you read that same Herald column from Steve Conroy, it's like, boy. So McDonough's a, you know, top-end elite left-shot NHL defenseman. The Bruins right now have two left-shot first-rounders in their systems just sitting there. Jake Zboril and this Juro Vakanainen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was their first-round pick a couple years ago.
Okay, so they have two left-shot defensemen coming up who were drafted in the first round. They have two left-shot defensemen who are sitting there who were drafted in the second round in Lawson and Ryan Lundgren. He's at the University of Minnesota right now. So they, like, if they're just patient, they can wait for one of those guys. But so here's the point. You have four left-shot defensemen.
Trade one for McDonough.
Drafted in the first and second round the last couple of years. You can only play three at most. And you think all three are going to, you know, you think... You know, so, I mean, all four aren't going to be good. And even if they are, you can't play them all. And you still have Krug. And you still have Chara, by the way. So, you know, no one's shedding a tear for trading something like that, I don't think. What if they asked for DeBrusk and Carlo?
I told you, I'm not giving Carlo. Carlo, I'm not going to give. But I told you, one of the wings and one of those young defensemen, and I think you're in business.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like Andy Kukwitukwu. Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 Sports Hub.
12 show on the shot clock. LeBron works off a Nance screen, gets doubled, feeds back to JR right side. JR once more to LeBron between the circles, heads to his left, works on Paul George, gets to the basket, lays it high off the window, and scores over the outstretched arm of Steven Adams as LeBron James now has 36 points. And with 49 seconds remaining, he's given the Cavaliers a 115-106 lead, and the Thunder take another timeout.
It's
Celtics-Cavs, seven games tonight.
Is it Celtics home court? I'm taking the Celtics still. I'm still taking the Celtics, you ball buster.
Did you hear his voice breaking, though?
Yeah, no.
He's cracking.
He's hesitant. Yeah, I sense some trepidation.
No, look, it's a completely different-looking team. If you've watched them these last couple of games, and I made a point to watch them last night because they were on national television, they're digging in defensively, which they were not doing when the multi little peanut was there. Jordan Clarkson and Hood are certified bucket-getters. Like, they've been nails. You know, it looks like they're having fun. I think that matters. Now, they look the same way when David Blatt got fired, and he was the scapegoat then a few years back. So I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up this pace. It's a younger team, so maybe they will be able to keep, you know, out-hustling this. OKC is a very athletic team, and they just, like, out-hustled and out-athleticed them last night, which was kind of surprising to watch because, again, I've been used to watching this old one-dimensional team. Now that they have young guys like Clarkson, like... It looks different. It looks like they're hustling. It looks like they're having fun. I just don't know if they're going to be able to keep it up. So, you know, Ty Lue will have to manage minutes. But right now, it's a wee concern. They look like a different team.
So Cavs in five right now.
No, don't put words in my mouth. I'm not saying Cavs in five, you ball buster.
I would say your support of the Celtics right now is tepid.
It's just kind of scary how quickly that this team has come together. They look like a completely different team. LeBron looks re-energized, and that should be a concern for Celtics fans.
Yeah, I'm not hemming and hawing here, walking the line. Right now, Cavs.
No, but you said that before the trade.
Yes, that's right. I'm holding my ground. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, Cavs. You thought the Celtics were going to have 46 wins or whatever it was this season.
Yeah, well, you were also the idiot who thought the Eagles were going to win the... Oh, wait, never mind. Sorry.
You know what, Murray? I looked it up. the do you know that the Celtics since that 16-2 start are on a 48-win pace?
Yeah, I know.
I just thought
you had them at 43 though.
Well, okay, so they were a little better than I thought they were, not a lot better. Look, the Cleveland thing is real. I think it's real. I think that there are a couple guys in particular you look at and you say they're good compliments for LeBron.
Hood and Clarkson, they're the main two. I mean, it's blatantly obvious.
I mean, and I like Hood better than Clarkson. Hood feels like a purer scorer and shooter to me than Clarkson is. But if they're that open and they will be playing with him, I think Cleveland's a jet.
Speaking of the mouthy little peanut, did he say something else recently overnight? You mentioned, I forgot to look at it.
It was a conversation with Chris Broussard of ESPN in which he said, he really doesn't have any, it was, I'm paraphrasing, but he didn't like the relationship he had with LeBron because LeBron talked down to him. And yeah, I mean, what do you want? You were a role player. You were thrown in the deal. The number one pick was important. You're not a superstar.
This guy thinks he's Steph Curry.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Of course he talked down to you. You're 5'8". That's like, what do you expect?
Easy joke.
Outside of the aesthetics, just from who he thinks he is. Again, he's one of the most delusional players in all of sports. Love you, mean it, really. Thanks for putting the Celtics back on the map the last 2.5 years. But you were maxed out. Danny Ainge proved that by shipping your ass out. And he's going to sit there and say, oh, LeBron talked down to me. LeBron could talk down to anyone in the league. Yeah, he's kind of a DB, but he's the best player on the planet. And what, you think you're on his level? Oh, please. Enjoy the bench in L.A. You're overrated.
Peanut.
Yeah, thank you, miss.
Of course, LeBron is a dink, though. Did you hear him?
So I have a hard time saying, like, I tease the a-hole when you're talking about LeBron, one of the great asshats of our generation. I mean, really.
Yeah, Murray doesn't have any problem saying I tease the a-hole, though he'll step right up to it. Go and, not that you would care to, watch his post-game interview with Doris Burke on Sunday after the game. My guys showed up. I got to get my guys. Shut up. You're such a loser.
No, he's insufferable. Everyone knows that. Everyone in the league certainly knows that. But for Isaiah Thomas to think differently, that when he goes there, that he's going to be talked to like an equal? Like, who the hell do you think you are? Chirping at Kevin Love for being sick one day. Chirping at other players. You're a role player. You are a role player. And that's why they shipped him out, because he was a bad fit.
Yeah, they shot lights out again last night. And 16 for 36.
Cleveland.
Yeah, 16.
Yes, these guys are not going to shoot like they're shooting right now.
This is what I'm saying.
So J.R. Smith, 6 of 9 from three-point distance last night.
That's another guy that looks completely re-energized. So it'll,
or is the shot just going down?
He can shoot, though. He can shoot. I mean, if he's focused, he can shoot.
He was 6 of 7 the other night and 6 of 9 last night. So what is that, 12 of 20?
12 of 16.
Yeah.
So it's two games. Concern, that's all, but let's see how sustainable it is, because again, they look like a faster team to run, and let's see how much they can keep up at this pace. And they're obviously not going to be keep up this pace with the way that they're shooting, but these last two games, a little scary.
All right, let's mix in some Celtics thoughts with our Bruins convo. 617-779-0985, one open line if you want to grab it. Bob in Boston, what do you got, Bobby?
Hey, I was just wondering, I was curious, do you have the TV ratings for the Bruins these days?
I do. They've gotten much better. They've got much better, and your comment line says Bruins versus Celtics. Celtics are still ahead. Celtics are going to finish ahead because they, in the beginning of the year, it wasn't close, but now it's close. Now they're like even again, like it usually is. Like, okay. I hear, like, there's been a couple nights where the Bruins have been opposite the Celtics and have won a couple. The Celtics have still won far more nights overall in the balance of the year. But just for example, last night the Bruins did like a three and a half, something like that. And I bet the Celtics tonight will do something similar. So it's sort of like, it felt, and again, I said this many times, that it felt like in the beginning of the year.
Blowout.
Oh, my God. The Celts were the number two team in town, and the Bruins were down by the Revolution, which I don't think was inaccurate.
They weren't even getting ones, right?
They were getting ones, but ones.
Well, the West Coast games did really poorly, but that's time, too.
But, I mean, interest was way down, as it would. No one was expecting anything. But I'll tell you what. Give the Bruins fans credit. Like, they're waiting for any excuse, really. It doesn't take much. I think basketball fans, it takes... You got to think that you're a championship team, and then the basketball fan comes. The hockey fan, the Bruins fan, just give me a good third line, man. Give me a reason, and you're back. And they came back.
Well, look, they're playing great, and they're a likable team on top of it. They really are. I mean, like, there's a youth injection there. Like, McAvoy jumping in that play last night to get the second goal that tied the game, right?
Oh,
what was the third one? I remember. Like, you just, the freedom and confidence that they are playing with. To me, that's the word, the confidence. These guys aren't afraid to make mistakes because I think Cassidy's giving them a little rope there.
Like last night, I just thought that was a legit win. That's a game they should lose. You all expect them to come back to earth and, like, just ups and downs. So one of the downs, like the down, this is supposed to be the down. And they just, they fight through. They won a game in New Jersey the other night. They had no business winning. And last night, they got, you know, punched in the honker early in that game. And instead of just wilting and taking the loss, they came back and totally deserved the win.
I thought they were going to lose last night. 2-1, I said, that's it. They're done tonight. This is, they're due for a skid. Here it comes.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's Crew. 11th among league defensemen with 35 points. In flight, Bergeron to the slot. He scores! He picks that spot with regularity. What a dish by Crew. In flight to Bergeron. Got a step and snapped it in. A power play goal. 3-2 Bruins.
And that's the first time I said, all right, fine. You want to play around with Bergeron and MVP? Go ahead. I'm not going to mock you. Don't chant it. Don't chant it at the Garden, please. But if you want to tell me he deserves consideration, like real consideration, I'm not there yet fully, but I'll just tell you. Last night is the first time I said, and it's not because Jack Edwards went on his, you know, Bergeron thing. Like, shocker, Jack Edwards thinks he should be MVP. That's stunning. What's next? Dale thinks he should be MVP too? Like, I mean, don't tell me that. Like, of course those Nesson guys think that he should be MVP. Like, that's not, you know. But I felt like for the first time I sort of said, okay, fine. I mean, he's going to play that well and the team's going to win the President's Trophy? Then he deserves to be considered. Fine.
I mean, this stretch that he's had is off the charts. I don't ever remember him playing this well. Ever. I mean, really, it is. You know, you said go back to his rookie year.
Not all three. I mean, so he hasn't scored like this. He hasn't shown. When he came up, he was an offensive player. I mean, he was everything, but still, like, I mean, I don't. Did he score 30 in his first 2 years?
Yeah, 32 goals, I think, in his second year or first year.
Okay, so he was
go ahead.
He was a goal scorer, an offensive guy, and then it really. Go ahead. Would you get
31. 31 goals in his second season. He was 20 years old.
And then, was it the third year that he got the concussion? When did he get the concussion?
I think
he got
the concussion when he was 22, that he played 10 games that year, so that must have been the year, right? 07, 08.
So I haven't seen him shoot the puck this well ever, or maybe since when he first came up. Like, I mean, so he's always been the defensive guy, he's always been the faceoff guy, and he still is that. But now when he went in on the break last night, you felt he was going to pick a corner, and he did. And it's like, all right, fine. He's ninth in the league in goals. And he's the best face-off guy, and he's a Selke guy, and the team's going to win the President's Trophy or be 1-2-3. So how is that? Like, that has to be. By definition, you've got to consider him an MVP. The only thing that holds him back is he's 31st in the league in scoring, in points.
You have 51 points in 50 games, though. I mean, he's having a hell of a year. I mean, he really is just phenomenal.
But it's hard to win an MVP when you rank 31st in points. But anyway, so that...
I just think he's in the conversation, that's all.
Absolutely should be. Martin on the Cape, on the Bees. Go, Martin.
Hey, Murray, don't worry. The Celts will be fine as long as Thesis still produces points and rebounds. You know, Jack Palance and City Slickers throws the perfect one-liner at Billy.
You can't say. I'll keep you on. I mean, it's not technically a swear, but it is.
See, it's a past tense of one.
Right.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Well, hats off to Cassidy. Bees are really showing backbone and character now. I know Sweeney is shaky on mid-season pickups, but they definitely should dish out some money to a legit free agent winger to make a serious stab at the playoffs and prop up the kids. Pat Maroon stands out to me as a good fit for this team. Consummate pro and worth every penny. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, and big. But he's not a free agent. You know, the thing about McDonough, it's not just this year, it's next. And, you know, McDonough is like an organizational thing. You need an NHL-ready left-shot guy. You're short one. Unless one of these kids emerges real quick. So that's why, you know, if they traded for McDonough in the offseason and gave him an extension, I'm thrilled with that, too. It's not just about this year. It's about your organizational depth chart. He fits perfectly. Perfectly. Cam and Taunton has a Celtics slot. Hi, Cam.
Jaylen Brown, man. I mean, I got to tell you, being in that building Sunday, nice to meet you, Jimmy, when I was there. This guy, I'm really starting to worry. I mean, I know he's young, and I know young guys have inconsistencies, but it's just like the ninth rate just refuses to use his athleticism. How many threes did he chuck up in that game on Sunday when he clearly wasn't going down for him? I'm starting to worry that this might be Jeff Green Jr.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what. I think he's got more tenacity and fire than Jeff Green does. Like, Green is like as passive as it gets. And with Brown, you see some. He's got a little bit of attitude. So I think that's a good thing. I don't think he's Jeff Green. Jeff Green might be a better pure shooter than Jaylen Brown, at least, you know, compared to what he is now. But the jump shot thing, he needs to remember what his strength is. Like, to me, if I were the Celtics, that's what I'd emphasize
well,
to this guy.
Do they? I was just going to ask you. How much do you blame on the system and how they want to play? They want those guys standing on the line shooting threes.
Okay. So the system's definitely part of the problem.
It is. There's no question. But I also think that there's a line there where if they start coming out on you there, then go by them. Like, you are something first. You should take the shot when it's there. No one's discouraging that. But that shouldn't be always the first thing you look for. At least him. Tatum, I feel differently about. Tatum, I say, if the shot's there, take the jumper. You can make those with greater consistency.
Pearl Jam tickets still coming here if you're waiting for those. Pat in Boston, though. First, go ahead, Pat.
So, a couple of calls ago, one of the guys said that he would trade Jake DeBoss for Ryan McDonough.
That's right.
And I think that's asinine because as much as I like Ryan McDonough, I think he's a good guy, where are you going to put him?
Where are you going to put him?
Well, everyone's talking about trading Kyle for him. He's a left shot defenseman. You got Chara and Krug there. And Krug's having a better season than him. I don't think he's a better player. But
Pat,
if you're gonna make a deal for Ryan McDonough, Torrey Krug's involved.
And I believe me, I do that in a heartbeat. But what's wrong with having
I would too, but I wouldn't trade Jake DeBusk for him.
Okay, so I mean see, I think that's a legit argument. Like I go back and forth. Like, who is Jake DeBrusk? And, like, why am I so, you know, why do I need to keep Jake DeBrusk? On one hand, it's like you're getting a legit number one defenseman for Jake DeBrusk. Yeah, do it all day long. And then I say, well, no, I sort of like Jake DeBrusk. The young kid, they just drafted him. He's got great wheels. Like, he's shown well. Like, that's the future. And so, that's a legit argument. The thing about where would you play Ryan McDonough?
Oh, that's asinine. Please, you have a good player. You make room for him.
Would you please? And it's not, they have a perfect spot for him. The second pairing on the left side, and Krug is the third pairing guy, which is what he should be. That's why he fits so well. It's perfect. Chara, McAvoy, McDonough, Carlo. Experience and, you know, savvy on the left side, two kids on the right, four defensemen, two with legs, you know, and McDonough's square in the prime of his career. You know, Carlo and McAvoy are coming up. McDonough's square in the prime, and Chara's hanging on at the end and playing well. Like, that's just that's a great top four. Are you kidding me?
No, he's a good fit for him. There's no two ways about it. I mean, he fits in a lot of ways. McDonough does. I told you, DeBrusk or Heinen, you should be willing to move one of those two. What do you need both for? Is either one of them a first-line player?
So I go Heinen. Right. Yeah. I mean, fair, Maz. Yeah, they might not be. I don't know if DeBrusk has a scoring touch to be a first-line player. So I go Heinen before DeBrusk. You've drafted DeBrusk in the first round, man. You've got nothing else from that draft. You got to show something from that draft. DeBrusk I keep. Heinen to me would be before DeBrusk. Sean in the car, Bergeron and MVP?
Yeah, Felger, I'm going to try my best to convince you here on my point of view on the whole Bergeron MVP thing. It has nothing to do with the points. It has everything to do with what he brings to the team. He's clearly going to be the next captain after Chara leaves. That's first and foremost. But he's a 200-foot player. He plays on the power play. He plays on the penalty kill. He plays on the 3-on-3 in the overtime. Once he came back into the lineup at the start of the season, this team changed.
Sean.
The whole outlook.
Hey, Sean, let me stop you. I understand all that. I get all that. I'm telling you that a guy that's 31st in the league in points doesn't win the MVP. Unless he's a defenseman. So let me ask you, when is the last MVP in the NHL to rank that low in scoring?
I don't know.
Ever?
But this is my thing with the whole awards thing with the MVP and the Norris, really. Those are the two. Is the NHL now looks towards points to determine who's the most valuable or who's the best defenseman.
I don't think that's a new thing. Sean, I don't think that's a new thing.
I think that's the trend nowadays. I mean, you take Bergeron off of the Bruins lineup, that whole team changes. It's not as successful as it is right now.
Of course. You could say that about Anze Kopitar, and you could say that about, I want to say Riley up in Buffalo, but they'd suck either way. But, I mean, like, those players are great. I love those players. They're not typically MVPs. You finish 30 in the league in points. You tell me, like, a nerd call. The John in Foxborough, Boston Sports Inf, whoever helps us out with these numbers. Give me the lowest ranking MVP in points, who's not a defenseman.
Or a goalie.
Right, obviously. Right. So take out goalies and take out defensemen, but I would venture to guess that very few defensemen who've won the MVP have been that low in scoring.
I mean, I'll tell you what. I got the list in front of me of guys who've won it, okay, in recent years. Just going backwards, and I'll leave out the goalies. McDavid, Kane, Crosby, Ovechkin, Malkin, Perry, Henrik Sedin, Ovechkin, Crosby, Thornton, Martin St. Louis, Forsberg, Sakic. You got to go all the way back to Chris Pronger in 2000. He had 62 points.
Yeah, well, that's a defenseman. Forsberg is not an awful comparison. Forsberg wasn't a lead leaguer in scoring.
He had 106 points that year.
So then I take it back. He had 106 points.
So again, if you go back, it's just one huge point producer after the next. It's not there. I mean, for a forward, it's not there.
So for a forward, you should break 100, though. Marty St. Louis had 94 in 2003-04.
Okay, that was like the lowest scoring year in the history. That was the pre-lockout year, then they had to shut it down. It was.
He had 38 goals, too.
Just got so bad. St. Louis got to 92?
94.
What's Bergeron on the pace for?
He's on pace probably for about 85.
It's really about where you rank. You know, because again, it's different eras and different, the league was really low scoring in St. Louis year. And, where did he rank in points? That's what I want to know. What is the lowest ranking league MVP in points? Not goals, points. And then I'll tell you if Bergeron has a shot.
I bet you all these guys were in the top five, if not the top 10.
Right. That's just usually the way that the voting there works. And maybe it should be different. It's just not.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.